So welcome to the fifth and final podcast of this Resonate Leadership podcast. I'm Aideen Hickey and I'm here again today with Dr. Jeff Pelham as we continue the discussion on how we can have fearless conversations. And today we're going to focus on how we can cultivate psychological safety. The last day we talked about the psychological safety scan. Today it's about those very learnable practices to cultivate psychological safety. And we're going to draw out what we've learned over the last four podcasts and pull those strands together. And we're going to identify three themes of practices for which contribute to psychological safety. And we'll signpost those through the conversation, Jeff. So welcome, Jeff. Looking forward to having this conversation with you.
Likewise.
And before we get started, there's a topic that I know you're very interested in, and many people who've done the coaching programs in Smurfit Business School will know it's of interest to you, Jeff, and that's about mood. And we see that as very connected to psychological safety. And I'd love if we could start by just talking about that for a little while.
Yeah, I'd love to do that because, as you say, I'm really interested in the subject of mood, as many people who I've worked with will know. And it occurred to me a while ago just how significant this subject of mood is for psychological safety. And I guess the question, well, what is mood? Well, it's not quite an emotion. It's more a background feel of things. It's often harder to name, and it can be harder to quite understand why. You know, wake up in the morning in a mood. Yeah. It's like, well, where did that come from, you know?
Exactly.
I think mood is both a form of understanding of situations, and also it's sort of the source from which we operate. And okay. As moods shift, our world can seem to shift likewise. I was just thinking about the example of a sports team, say a football or rugby team. Now, when they're winning, there's confidence and there's an ease of movement and skill. But if the other side scores, and suddenly they're drawing or such like, and it can be like their confidence goes, and the mood shifted, and all of a sudden they feel stiff, they're making mistakes. So mood seems to be a core subject for me, and I was really interested to read from Daniel Goleman, you know, the guy who writes about emotional intelligence.
Yeah,
he has this book, Primal Leadership. And he says, managing your mood and the moods of followers is the primary task of leaders.
Oh, that's a great quote. Yeah, great quote, Jeff.
Does that speak to you, does it?
It does. And I see it as having two distinct parts. There's the piece about managing our own mood and the mood of followers as two distinct things. I think it's a great quote.
Yeah. And you recognise it when people start talking about the mood in the room, or the morale of the team, or the feel of the place. So it feels like it sort of so underlies that whole sense of if you go into the room, say, you know, you're going to see your manager, and probably the most important thing, you know, you want to know about is well, what's the mood? You said to me there's an Irish expression.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I really thought it was Irish until speaking to you, and it didn't resonate, but I'd be used to people in an office saying, so what form is he or she in today? What form are they in? Which is, you know, a different version of that. So, Jeff, I mean, we're talking about mood, but what do you think it's got to do with psychological safety?
Well, if you imagine yourself going into, say, the room with your leader, or into a room, say a team meeting, and you spot what the mood in the room is, or the mood of your leader is, there's probably nothing more significant about how you feel in yourself, about how you think this is going. Yeah. And I guess that speaks to the importance of sort of leaders and managers about understanding the significance of the mood that they have and that they bring into the room, and the impact it's likely to have on people.
Absolutely. And I can think of situations in my life where people might have said, maybe today's not a good day to bring this up with somebody. Let's wait until another day. So depending on what the mood is of the person, and when we think about psychological safety and people feeling safe to contribute, to speak up, to raise questions, ideas, concerns, that might be affected by the mood that a leader brings into the room or that's in a team in a, on a particular day.
Absolutely. So if you are, I guess it's anybody in a team or in a group, but particularly those with the authority seems to magnify the significance of this. It behoves us to, well, what am I bringing here? Is my mood here going to contribute to a sense of safety amongst people, or is it going to be create a sense of anxiety amongst people? So there's a real I think, responsibility really to have to develop that reflective capacity, both to notice how I am going into this, and if need be, sort of manage it to some extent. I was thinking about the housing association I mentioned where they brought the coaching practices in. And I was talking to the CEO, and he was saying that it's a lovely new open plan building they've got. But he knows that as soon as he's parked his car and he walks through the front door, he knows that all eyes are upon him. And he knows that in a way the thing that people will be on the lookout for, even though they're not really consciously doing it, is what's his mood? And is it an upbeat mood? Is he looking anxious? You know, I guess there's that notion of getting your game face on. So it was just such an interesting observation from him. And when we did the research, I was so interested in so many of the quotes that people gave who, were speaking about the place. I'll just give you some of those because I think it's so interesting. He said, people said things like, "I still remember being stunned rigid by the feel of the place when I first arrived. The level of trust was unbelievable." Mm. Now, that's so interesting, isn't it? Because that sense of the sense of the importance of trust, which we have spoken about throughout the podcasts. There's another quote. It's like a breath of fresh air to come into such an open and honest culture where it's okay to say what you think. And again, that was another, and it's kind of a mood, isn't it? It's like, it's safe here it's an honest culture. You can say, what you need to say here. And just one more, I'm really passionate about what I do. Everybody seems to see it as mattering. It's not just a job. No one ever plans to work in housing, but they arrive in here and they end up feeling passionate about it. And again, that sense of being passionate is a mood. And I really recognized it when I was there, these moods. It was a kind of an upbeat mood. It was a kind of a pride which permeated the place. So I just think this whole question of mood and how you attend to it, how you manage it, how you recognize it, what you understand it might mean, is such a fertile ground, really, for this.
So we said at the outset, Jeff, that we'd be talking about three kind of themes of practices, and I guess this is the first one, which is acknowledging and managing our mood. And if I've understood correctly from the conversation so far, Jeff, we're talking about a few different strands. One is treating a mood as data. So what's it telling me? And that might be my mood, or it could be the mood of others around us that will tell us something. And I think, as both you and I do in workshops, sometimes we actually ask people to share their mood in one word sometimes, and that provides an amazing amount of data. So it's a data point is the first thing. I think the second thing is acknowledging our own mood and seeing if that matches the situation we're walking into. It might be that there's something going on at home or in another part of our lives. Maybe we need to take more care of ourselves. And sometimes we feel like we can't prioritize ourselves, but the reality is if we don't look after ourselves, we can't lead other people effectively if we're in a particular mood.
Because moods are contagious.
Yeah.
And again, especially those who have a particular significance in a meeting. And it's not just in teams and organizations. We know it at home. We know it everywhere, don't we? You know, as a parent, it's like, what moods are my kids going to be in?
Exactly. Yeah. And I've had clients come to me, Jeff, when we're talking about the topic of psychological safety, and people feeling unsettled because of the mood their boss is in, and they think they've done something. Yes. So they feel psychologically unsafe for whatever reason. And it may turn out that the person has something else going on in their life that you're not aware of. But I think we might underestimate how infectious that mood is, and how it can impact on other people's feelings. And there's just one more thing I'd love to add into that here, Jeff, is sometimes it's helpful if we share our mood and say to people, I've got a lot going on at home at the moment.
Yes.
If I'm not myself, just want to say that's why that is.
Yes.
It's got nothing to do with you or the work, but there's something else going on for me. Or I'm really busy right now. If I'm a bit short with you, apologies. It's just a really busy time. But for people to know that it's coming from a different place and not related to the individual's performance, or that they've done something wrong. So that's theme number one in terms of practices, Jeff. And we knew we had to contain this one because we could talk about this one for a while. So we'll leave it at that for now. So, Jeff, the next piece of that Daniel Goleman quote was, so he said, managing your mood and the mood of followers is the primary task of leaders. And managing the mood of followers, we've touched on a little bit because moods are contagious. But there's a practice that Professor Amy Edmondson advocates, which I think really impacts the mood of followers. And that's what she calls setting the stage. And since I've come across this practice, I've used it in so many different situations and found it to be really, really helpful. So when there's a pivotal conversation you need to have, or there's a workshop that I'm hosting, or going to a particular meeting, that I step back and go, okay, so what are the things that I want to do to set the stage? And there's some suggested parts of that. And the first one is being clear on purpose. Mm-hmm. So what's our purpose here today? What's the cost of failure? So what's at stake if this doesn't go well? Mm-hmm. How do we want to engage with each other in this room or in this conversation? So what are we looking for? Are we looking for input? Is it that I'm giving a presentation? So it's a one-way dialogue. So what's the dynamic there in terms of the engagement we're looking for? What's the role of the leader? So is the role of the leader, and the leader might be me or you, what's the role of the leader? Is it to tell people what needs to get done? Is it to convey a sense of urgency and say that, look, we can't have such a collaborative environment here today. We've got, you know, a fire that needs to be put out. We need to get moving. That sets a certain mood, Jeff. Mm. Whereas in another room, it might be, okay, there's a piece of, you know, work that we need to figure out. We don't fully understand it. We don't have the answers. I don't have the answers. Mm. And I really want people to participate and contribute so we can really get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And then we might also flag some uncertainties, Jeff, around the piece of work we're doing, or some interdependencies with other teams. So there's a set of headings underneath this title of setting the stage, which is the second practice that we wanted to talk about, that will help to set the mood for the followers.
Yeah. I think there's been some examples. I think you may know them better than me, but like the sort of Doc Rivers and...
Yeah, so we've been bringing up examples over the four podcasts, and then this is the fifth one. I think Doc Rivers is probably my favorite one.
Yeah.
So for those who maybe haven't listened to previous episodes, he's a basketball coach from the US, an NBA basketball coach. And at the very beginning of every season, he sets the stage. And a couple of interesting things that he does, as well as obviously talking about purpose and what they want to achieve, is he talks about his role. And he says, I'm Doc Rivers. And I'm human, and I'm going to make mistakes. And that sets a particular tone or a mood. And the other thing that he did, which I mentioned in previous podcasts, was having a blank on a wall where, you know, a flag would go if they won the championship, and a spotlight shining on that blank place to really clarify everybody's sense of purpose. There's another example, though, Jeff, that I'd love to put in here, which is, it's a new one. I spoke with a number of weeks ago, I spoke with a data protection officer, and she talked about how important psychological safety is to her role. So she works in a financial services organization, which is across Europe. And she makes sure that for every induction of new staff that happens in the organization, she gets in front of them. And she's able to talk to them about what's important in terms of data protection, why it's important, what's at stake. And by her building a connection with them, it allows people to see her as more approachable to come to in the event that a problem happens. So she very much sets the stage with the employees so that they know the importance of data protection to the organization. So if you have a very clear sense of purpose and one that people can buy into, people get on board with something and they get a sense of belonging. And with that sense of belonging comes engagement and participation. And it's like there are people around the bus and they're going on that journey with you. And I just think that that is another real benefit of being able to set that stage at the outset, basically inviting everybody onto that bus to go on that journey. And you're setting the guide rails for the direction you're going on. You're not saying these are all the steps we're going to get to go on to get there, but you're setting the guide rails. And then, which will come up in the next set of practices, is allowing people to take that journey themselves, but with the guide rails set.
One of the things that really stood out for me was that notion of Ubuntu.
Oh, yeah.
As a kind of, it's more than setting the scene, isn't it? It's like saying, well, who are we here and how are we going to be with each other?
Yeah. So for those who haven't listened to previous podcasts, that's, an African word that's used. A word doesn't describe it, Jeff, but it feels like a culture. The word is attached to a culture where everybody is there for each other. And Doc Rivers brought that into the team that he was leading at the time. And he tells the story of how he got onto a bus one day with a hamburger in his hand. And one of the players turned to him and said, "You're not doing Ubuntu, man," because he hadn't thought about the rest of the team and their food needs. So everybody's accountable to this, way of being, which is Ubuntu in that particular case.
I'm not sure if it's quite the same, but I was struck again by that housing association, a sense of belonging. And somebody came up with a lovely expression. They talked of bonds of appreciation.
Oh, lovely.
And I just thought, and again, it caught something about a group of people, an organisation that felt there's something shared here. There's a kind of a sharing of purpose it's a bit like a team working together. You know, they work with each other and for each other. And I don't want to, idealise this, but it was such a lovely expression. And it was meaningful to this person, bonds of appreciation.
I'm afraid we might sound like we're quite soft and fluffy here, Jeff, with talking about this. But I have found since, coming across this approach of setting the stage, that it has been incredibly useful in terms of establishing clarity from the word go in terms of how this team is going to work together. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing fluffy whatsoever about that. If you think about high-performing teams, having that clarity from the outset is one of the most important things. Because if people don't know why they're here and what they're there to do, people can be going at odds and in different directions.
Well, with Doc Rivers, he were extraordinarily successful, weren't they?
They were. They won the national championship in the US, and they're extraordinarily successful. So they won what they needed to win. So it's not just about having a place that feels good. Yeah. It's about actually delivering results.
Yeah. The Housing Association was in the Times top 100 organizations to work with for 10 years. And for seven of those years, they were in the top 20, seven consecutive years. Wow. Which says something that's not just about. It's interesting. We're worried about it. This notion of being soft and fluffy, but I get what you mean. It can feel idealized, and we'll come to the other side of the coin in a short while. But it's really important.
So we've been talking for the last few minutes. So we started with talking about mood. The second piece here has been talking about setting the stage, which is, how we can manage the mood of followers. And there's been a number of different elements to that setting of the stage. There's been pieces around purpose, cost of failure, how we want to engage with each other, role of the leader, uncertainties, interdependencies. And there's a piece about, belonging. If we have that core, sense of purpose, people can belong to a greater extent. And if we as a leader can express some vulnerability as we set that stage, people can feel freer to admit mistakes or to share if something isn't going well. Have I missed anything in that piece, Jeff? Because there's a lot of different strands to that.
Really good summary.
Yeah. So then we're heading towards the third set of practices, Jeff, which is again up both of our streets and maybe came as a surprise to us in that we didn't expect to be talking about this on a psychological safety podcast, which is coaching practices. So for coaching practices to be seen as another string to leaders' bows, and that if we cultivate coaching practices, then we, as a result, as a consequence, cultivate psychological safety. So I'm just wondering there, Jeff, are there a few coaching practices in particular that you draw attention to?
I guess a really key one is what you might call a developmental mindset. It's the belief that people, either there's their current behavior and there's potential, and it's about their potential, and moving to a place where people are more able to think for themselves and take responsibilities for themselves.
So just that particular one, Jeff, is interesting. So, for example, if somebody were giving feedback to an employee in an organization, you could give it as tough feedback to somebody, or if you give it from a developmental mindset perspective, you're giving the feedback to them with a view to their growth.
Absolutely.
So you're thinking, Mary, this didn't go quite to plan. I know you're, you know, able to deliver so much more. And can we have a conversation about what that could have looked like if you had done it differently, or with a view to them achieving more, with them fulfilling their potential, as opposed to being transactional and giving tough feedback that something just wasn't good enough?
That's right. And just to give a flavour of the ordinary, everyday kind of way of managing, just somebody saying, it's all about coming to your own solution yourself instead of being shown a solution. Or a manager challenged me to solve problems for myself rather than telling me what to do. So it was that sense of the key task, a key task of managing and leading, it was developing the people around you. And the practices are about, well, how do we do this? You know, how do we get it from a good intention to something very practical? And, you know, the heart of it, the absolute heart of it, which just goes back in sense of what we've been talking about, is having a non-judgmental attitude as far as possible. You know, we're all judgmental, but really, you know, not getting into the blame game, trying to put judgments aside when you meet somebody. Again, that thing about it's look at potential rather than current behavior, or keep potential in mind and help the person think for themselves about what happened, how they could have done things differently, and so forth.
And Jeff, that fits really nicely with one that a couple of people have mentioned to me, both the data protection officer and a risk director that I spoke with, about the importance of receiving bad news well, so in a non-judgmental way. And this data protection officer I mentioned earlier, she said to me that when somebody comes to her with a data breach, they're usually coming, and we talked about mood earlier, they're coming anxious, they're coming nervous, they're beating themselves up. And when they make the call to her, she will say, more senior people have done worse things than this, just to settle them, to settle the mood. And then they can get down to business to figure out what they need to do to tackle the data breach.
Yes. Makes such a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I've got one person here. She said, I feel like she has great confidence in me. She says, unless it's a really big decision, I should go ahead myself. If it goes wrong, she'll say it's her fault.
Okay.
So, you know, that's sort of things. And then it says trust builds and so forth. And I guess the key skill, which you've already alluded to, is listening. And it's so fundamental, you can just skate straight over it. But listening, really listening. Most people listen, they've already got their reply in mind, or they're listening to win the argument, or just waiting for a space to make their own point of view. To really listen to people is to start, just to give them the space. It makes such a difference. I think you were telling me about an example with doctors.
Yeah, some research that was done. I don't recall if we've mentioned this already in the podcast, but with general practitioners in the US, and they were timed to see how long it would take for them to interrupt their patients. And the average time was 23 seconds when they interrupted the patients. And then they asked the doctors to go again with a different set of patients and just hear them out, just listen to them in full. And it would have taken the doctors on average 6 more seconds to fully listen to the patients. And that's listening to learn. So Jennifer Garvey-Berger talks about listening to learn, listening to win, listening to fix. And she's a lovely little 3-minute YouTube clip about that. We're trying to listen sometimes just to fix something quickly, listen to win a conversation. But where we really want to be is listening to learn. Coupled with that then, Jeff, is the art of asking curious conversation, curious questions rather.
Yes.
To just tease out and understand what's going on and not jump to conclusions.
Because one of the things we do on the coaching programs is have a conversation, but don't give advice.
Yeah.
And don't tell people what they should do. You know, someone brings an issue and at the beginning people are completely stumped. You know, they don't know what, and it's true. It's almost like we don't know what to do unless we do that. And also often a feeling of self-worth is wrapped around, I should know how to do. So learning these on the programs, it'll be learning, how do you listen longer? And after you've listened, what do you do? And as you say, there's asking open questions. What is really powerful, which seems so mundane, is things like paraphrasing and summarizing. That's the sort of thing you can do. And it's immensely powerful. And people often laugh at it. Say, well, you just repeat back what I said. No, it's not like that. People hear back what they've said, and it almost kind of puts it between you. And people nearly always pick up on the next move, the next thing that comes to them. And you can go a long, long way without having to take the reins of the conversation to really help somebody explore for themselves, well, what's in this issue? What's happening? What could I do differently? So there's a whole set of really practical practices that completely shift the kind of conversations. And these are the kinds of things that Coaching Skills for Manager program enables people. It's like opening up unknown territory. If you haven't, experienced it before. And, these are the kinds of practices. I won't go into any more detail. But so learning those practices of how do you help people explore something more for themselves rather than jumping in and telling them what you think is the right thing to be doing.
And what I love about that, Jeff, because, you know, when I started training as a coach first about 15 years ago, and when this was introduced as a concept, I genuinely didn't know what to do because I was used to giving people advice. Somebody's asking me about something, so they clearly want my advice. And I remember somebody coming in, a guest came in to one of the coaching classes, and he put himself forward to be coached. And afterwards he said, and this was a very experienced person, if you think, and it was a general comment to the room, if you think you know better than me as to what I should do, and I'm living in this situation, then you're arrogant. And it was a comment that really struck deep with me. And I was like, wow, it presumes that I know better than somebody who's actually immersed in this situation. And how could I possibly know better? So there's something about the coaching practices that really evokes an adult to adult engagement where we're meeting each other as adults. I believe you can sort this problem out. I don't have all the data. You have more than I do.
Usually we're operating on a deficit model of the other. You know, haven't got the resources.
Yes.
Or the capability to figure this for themselves. So I'm going to need to top them up with mine. And again, it is such an empowering thing to do there's nothing like coming to your own solution or your mm-hmm. own next step rather than just doing what somebody else has suggested or even told you to do. I feel quite passionate about this, actually, so I won't say much more. But this is the heart of the coaching, the belief in potential, the belief that people with proper support and encouragement and skillful interventions can really dig a lot deeper than people might imagine.
And if I try and take this to the next step then, Jeff, and talk about, well, how does this fit with psychological safety? Because we've taken a bit of a leap there and it's intuitive to us. But it makes sense because if we're listening to people fully, they're included. So Timothy Clark has four stages of psychological safety, and it just brings me back to that. And his four stages are inclusion safety, contributor safety, learner safety, and challenger safety. And if I'm in a coaching type environment, I'm included in the conversation. People want to listen to me. I can contribute. If I make a mistake, there's a non-judgmental environment, so it's not going to be held against me. We will try and fix it, but I'll be freer to declare when a mistake has been made. And then we'll end up with better quality outputs as a result because we're fixing problems. And then if I see something that is wrong, if I've got a genuine concern about something, I'm in an environment which is safe for me to speak up and share that there's something that's very concerning to me. So it's like the coaching practices create the container for psychological safety to be there.
That's right. And I again, you know, this can sound all very sort of nicey-nicey, but if once a person is feeling that this is a safe place, then there is the room for challenge. And there are the challenge is a vital part of coaching. I used to run this course called Nice is Not Enough. As a sort of an antidote to people who thought the coaching was all about, you know, being empathic and that. People can be challenged about their, you know, what's happened and so forth. And it's needed sometimes, especially if somebody, you know, is, I don't know, insisting about this, that and the other, about maybe about other people's behaviour or something like that. You know, the simple challenge could be, what do you think your part in this is then? Or something like that, you know.
Absolutely.
So it's both of those things. And some of the best coaches I know have been, really challenging to people.
Yeah.
I remember I was once having a real bad time with my boss and I had a coach who was no holds barred. And after I'd said an awful lot about this, that and the other and why I wasn't going to do this and that, he just said to me, well, you're going to grow up.
Oh, wow.
He did. He said, because at the end of the day, you know, he is your boss and you've got to decide to what extent are you going to, you know, collaborate and work. And it was like being dosed with a bucket of cold water. But I trusted this guy. You know, I knew he was on my side. And so, it, you know, it was a very ferocious challenge. But it was kind of what I needed. So there's that judgment in it about where's the balance here? If he'd just gone along with, you know, my story about things, I'd have just gone deeper into it, you know. So it's both, isn't it?
It is. It's challenge and support. So it's not without accountability. It's not about it being a safe and comfortable place. It's about creating the space for people to deliver. And there is accountability within that. Jeff, there's an example I'd love to share before we start drawing the strands together in this conversation. Many of the listeners, no doubt, will be from Ireland and will have watched the Irish South African rugby game a couple of weeks ago. And an example of psychological safety for me that just jumped out at me was when we had issues with the line out. So the Irish line out malfunctioned three times in a row. And it got to the point where one of the commentators on the channel that I was watching said they basically called out the hooker and said he might have to go at half time. And I remember thinking, wow, this is like such a public stage, this clear accountability. The whole, you know, country and beyond is watching this and it's just going wrong. And they managed to get it back working again. But Johnny Sexton, our captain, was interviewed afterwards in the press conference and he was asked a specific question. about what did he do to get the line out working again. And they asked specifically about the hooker and his role in that. And Johnny Sexton came out and he said, first of all, I did nothing to fix it. He said, I let the lads have their conversation for them to fix it. And it's got nothing to do with the hooker. So he basically was showing us that in that environment, on this pitch, on the world stage, they weren't looking to each other to give out to each other for not performing. They weren't blaming anybody. There was space allowed. Even though it had malfunctioned three times, there was space allowed to actually resolve the issue. And I just thought that was an incredibly psychologically safe space for them. And there's one more moment which doesn't fit neatly with psychological safety, but I thought it was really profound, Jeff, was later on in the match, and it must have been coming to the end, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes towards the end, and the whole situation was quite fraught. And it might have been there was an injury or a water break, I can't recall. And the Irish team went into a huddle. And at times like that, sometimes people could be shouting at each other and discussing things. But one of the team members led the team in a team breathing exercise. They literally were breathing at the same time as each other and composing themselves. So that when they went back into action, they were composed on the ball. And I thought it was a phenomenal moment. And I do think it fits with psychological safety, because I think there's, you know, you've talked before about conversations, and we've talked about the art of fearless conversations, about a conversation being like we're passing the ball to each other. And when we have that ball, we have the power to determine the next move, really, because depending on what we do with it will dictate how somebody responds to us. And there's this great quote that I came across, which is, between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space, we have the power to decide the next move. And it's that space, Jeff. It's the space.
I don't know if this is right. I don't know if I'm forcing it a bit, but it reminds what your story of what happened with the Irish team, and I didn't watch the match, but I know they won.
Yeah.
Is Ubuntu.
Yes.
That sense of the group coming together and finding their own way, even though it would have been kind of hard for perhaps, but it wouldn't have been shaming.
No.
Felt like they came to what was needed as a group. And that psychological safety enables that hard decision to be made.
There was another team, and I won't name the team, Jeff, but things weren't going well for them. And at one point, somebody lost the ball on the opponent's try line. And the captain of that team, and the camera stayed on him for a considerable amount of time, was seen roaring and shouting at the player who lost the ball. And I remember thinking, wow, that is the opposite of what we saw in the other match.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, just to step back from it all a moment and to start drawing the threads together. So we started this conversation talking about the art of fearless conversations. Fearless meaning brave, fearless meaning less fear. And the purpose of having these conversations was because we understood the importance of psychological safety, A, to high-performing teams so we can deliver results for organizations, but B, also so that individuals within teams can thrive and be their best selves. And we've talked about what those conversations are like in podcast one. In podcast two, we've talked about power and psychological safety. In three, we talked about diversity, inclusion and psychological safety. The last day, we talked about psychological safety scan, where you go into a team and you can actually understand, well, what's actually going on here. And that's such a rich process. And then today we've identified a whole, like, three themes, I guess, of practices. And the first was around mood, really, and understanding our mood and the role that we play as a leader in managing our own mood and the mood of followers, which brought us neatly into the whole set of kind of skills around setting the stage and the different things that a leader might do to set the stage in a conversation or on a project. And the third thing, Jeff, that we talked about was this whole range of coaching skills or practices that can, as a byproduct, cultivate psychological safety. And I have so enjoyed these conversations with you, Jeff. And in parallel, I've been doing lots of work with different organizations and cultivating psychological safety. So it's been a really stimulating process. And the work has informed the podcast. The podcast has informed the work. And I'd just like to invite any listener who want to get in touch, who are interested, who want to do some work around this, please do get in touch, as we're delighted to have a conversation. And I'm so grateful to you, Jeff, for being a thinking partner and, you know, a joint partner in this conversation. So thank you so much.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Aideen. And I'd just like to underline some of the conversations we've had offline about the work you've been doing, and hearing about some of the teams and the impact of that work with the teams, and how it shifts things, you know, shifts things so that people feel able to speak and share and so forth. I suppose that's been part of what's been lovely about this. I know it's important, and I know there's ways of working with it that make a difference to people.
That's fantastic. There isn't a better way to end. Thank you so much, Jeff. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.